Hear NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday Night, Tailgate.
Now joining us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former wide receiver Dennis McKinnon. Let me remind you about Dennis's background. He's from Quitman, Georgia, which is a little west of Valdosta, just north of the Florida border. Played his college ball at Florida State from 1979 to 1982. He was an undrafted free agent, Bob. You know how we love those guys. Signed by the Bears in 83, and he played in the league from 83 to 1990 for the Bears and the Cowboys. Over the course of his NFL career, he had 194 receptions for just over 3,000 yards, and he scored 22 touchdowns. He also returned three punts for touchdowns, including a 59-yarder his rookie season against the Packers. And he was a prominent player back in that dominant 85 Bears team that won Super Bowl 20. Dennis actually joined us all the way back on January 24th of 2013. So it only took me 6.5 years to be smart enough to get him back on the show, but we're very excited he did it. And he's here with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Dennis, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Good evening, guys.
Hey, Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
It's a good night to take a break from a very, very boring football game.
We're glad maybe we can spice up the night just a little bit for you. You're certainly doing that for us. Thank you for being here. Dennis, I want to start our time with you by going back to your time at Florida State. When you got there in 1979, Bobby Bowden had only been there for three seasons. And I know Tallahassee is close to where you're from, but I'm curious, how did he get you away from Georgia or Georgia Southern or any of the other SEC teams and convince you to come to Florida State?
Well, just going back on memory, during that time, when I came out of South Miami High School, that's going back to 1979, I was number two in the country at my position behind a guy named Tony Hunter who ended up going to Notre Dame. And I had an opportunity to go to any school I wanted to go to. Living in South Miami, I was directly across the street, what we call it, a three iron from the University of Miami, who did not heavily recruit me, which was insulting, to say the least. But the advantage that Florida State had of all the schools I went to, almost all the schools that I visited, had dormitories for their football players. Florida State did not. They had an apartment complex. And that was the difference. And it was on grass. And the ratio from girls to guys was 8-1. So it was an easy choice.
Smart man.
That's awesome. Indeed. And Dennis, when I look back over your college career, your freshman year, you guys go undefeated in the regular season, lose a tough one to Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl. The way things are in Division I college football, though, at the end of the regular season, you got that whole month in between the next game, especially if you're playing in a major bowl game. I'm always curious, is it hard to stay focused and energized and, you know, sharp for that whole month while you're waiting for that Orange Bowl game to, you know, get started? And it's not like, it feels like to me it would be almost like another season because of the lag time, and you got to open up against one of the best teams in the country. What's it like going over that month period of time?
Well, I think you're young, and anytime you don't have to deal with a tremendous amount of practice, you watch a lot of film as opposed to being outside and practicing, trying to save the legs. But there's always an advantage when you're playing in a warm weather bowl. So that means you're down in Florida, really. It's 80 degrees. Okay. And you got beautiful women everywhere. So the game was an afterthought. And for a lot of us, and you know, that were student athletes, the good thing about going to bowl games back in those days, we got a warm-up suit, you got a watch, you got, you know, so you got some swag. And so really, the bowl game was really about having a great year, but the gifts that you get when you get to a bowl game.
And Dennis, your next season, you guys in Oklahoma, right back at it in the Orange Bowl, this time a one-point loss, and you lost earlier that season by 1 point to Miami. So you're a couple of points away from being undefeated and probably having a national championship ring on. So a couple of things. What do you remember about that second season, and how much do you hate Oklahoma still?
Well, for a lot of us, we had never seen players that were that big. Most of those guys in Oklahoma had mustaches, and then they were married. And this is going back to the Bears' sister days. And so knew that we were outmatched. But what I can do, I can close my eyes. I can see the last play when Oklahoma goes for two. They are trailing 17-16. They don't kick the extra point. They go for two. I'm watching a guy go in motion, and most guys who understand football, if a guy goes in motion, the guys follow him, that's man coverage. If a guy goes in motion, nobody goes with him in motion, they're going to kick the coverage, so the backside corner has to pick up the guy coming in motion. Well, we kick, you know, the guy goes in motion, and the corner didn't pick up his assignment. Guy runs in the flat, and they convert two to beat us 18-17. I still remember that. We were that close from the national championship. So very disheartening, but how unfortunate for us to have to play Oklahoma back-to-back years. And I still go back to my freshman year, and they had Billy Sims at tailback. So, you know, that's a long time ago.
And Dennis, you know, when you leave Florida State, you go from playing for Bobby Bowden to Mike Ditka. How much of a culture shock was that?
It wasn't so much a culture shock as it relates to the coaches, the weather. I mean, I lived in Florida my entire life. And to get to Chicago and have to deal with those kind of elements. And when I got here in 83, the Bears are not a very good football team, very good on defense. Everybody knows about Walter Payton, but they had no passing game. Went 8-8 my freshman year, or I'm going to say it's my rookie year, and it was the first time that I found out what frostbite is. Because I was doing pregame catching punts and could not feel my hand. And, I had to adjust very quickly in terms of what preparation I had to do to protect my hands and my feet, and keeping the air out so that I would not get frostbite either my hands or my feet. And then subsequently, you know, for the next 4 years, we made the playoffs. So I had to get used to playing in cold weather.
Five questions for Dennis.
Dennis, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. And that was my point. I always love to talk to guys that played in Chicago because of the whole Soldier Field thing. A guy that grew up down south, played at college in the south, and all of a sudden you're in that NFC Central Division playing at Soldier Field. Do you ever get used to it, Dennis? And did you guys use that to your advantage over other teams?
Well, I'll go forward and I'll go backwards. That sounded good when L.A. came to Chicago in 1988, they played us pretty well, but I still remember probably the most prominent year when the Niners came in and they ate and knocked us out of the conference championship to go to the Super Bowl. And it was probably 12 degrees at Soldier Field, frozen field. And our offense didn't show up that day, but something about cold weather, if you practice in it every day, when the weather changes, you get used to it. Almost every team today that's in the Midwest has an indoor facility to train when the weather changes. Back in those days when I played, we didn't have an indoor facility. So we would have to travel to a high school that was indoor to practice, or we would drive, take buses all the way to either Champaign or Urbana, University of Illinois, or we go to Wisconsin to use their indoor facility. So it was depressing, but that's at that time how cheap the Bears were. Amazing how much things have changed since then.
And I was looking at some of your ex-teammates, and especially your rookie year, Dennis, Willie Gault was on that team, and always a fascinating athlete, obviously. Tell us more about your relationship with him and what kind of athlete you saw.
You know, Willie and we call it blood brothers for life, you know. The great thing about brothers is sometimes you get along and sometimes you don't like each other. But there's always going to be a foundation of love. I didn't like Willie when we drafted him because back in those days we were doing 6 weeks of two-a-day training camp. And, the Bears signed Willie, while he was flying in midair coming from Helsinki, and they set the world record in 4x1. And Willie did not show up at training camp until after the fifth week. So I've been running basically every practice for 2 days. And you know, one thing you know about veterans back in those days, they could tell you exactly what day they were not going to practice. Oh, I'm going to have a hamstring pull today. I'm going to have a groin pull on Wednesday. I'm not going to practice. How do you know that? Because back in those days, they didn't have MRI machines. So any kind of muscle injury, you couldn't x-ray. So I had veteran players faking injuries to get out of practice. and they worked me like a dog. And then Willie shows up the last week of 2 days. Well, he's the number one draft pick. They're not going to cut him. So I felt that he was pampered and force-fed and protected the entire time he was here. And I had to bust my behind to become relevant. And every time the Bears drafted a receiver from 83 to 87, they never put him behind Galt, always put him behind me because he was a protected asset. But it didn't really matter who they brought in. I beat them all out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So Will and I are still very good friends, but I will say one thing about him, even to this day. I've never seen anybody that fast. And he was a tremendous asset for us because of his speed, they had to double, they had to roll the safety to open up the middle of the field for me. And really the Bears' whole identity changed when Galt and I got here in 1983 because all of a sudden now, we've got a pass intact to compliment Walter and a great offensive line.
Dennis, we had Emery Moorhead on the show a few years ago, and I asked him about you. And he said, Silky D, it was clear the first minicamp that he attended, he was a keeper. And he said, you were a tenacious blocker, a great pass catcher, tremendous punt returner, and Ditka really loved you. So all of that, I'm imagining, is 100% true. What do you remember about Emery and the things he said about you?
Every time I see him, I tell people, I say, that's Money Mo. He said, what does that mean? I say, Money Mo was strong side tight end. I lined up off his behind or his butt every time I lined up playing for the Bears. And I used to say his butt was so high, he could reach over his back and grab his wallet. And that's kind of, we call that an Afro-American joke, but it's true. You know, I weighed 183 pounds. And I think for me, I was always pissed off because I felt that every day I had to prove that I belonged on the squad. I had to work harder. I never got the preferential treatment. But I think that probably the best thing that happened for me was that when I was elevated from the dungeon up to upstairs where the veteran players were, I sat across directly from Walter Payton every day for 6 years. And so for me to be put there, I knew I belonged because it was out of respect. And I mean, if you watch the Bears over the 80s, they became a right-handed running football team because Walter would only run to where he trusted. He trusted me. He never trusted Willie. And one thing you know about offensive, in this case, defensive line, you got an outside backer, you got a defensive end, you got a strong safety, depending on if it's a 3-4 or 4-3. Whoever the first line of support is, I had to block. So whenever our guards pulled, they never had to worry about being blindsided before they could turn up the field. So I took tremendous pride out of that because I'm blocking for Sweden. That's the best job in the world.
And Dennis, when I look back over your game logs, and I'm always curious, you know, the first touchdown you scored, and it came week 8 of your rookie season, a 20-yard touchdown pass from Vince Evans, a game against the Eagles that you guys would win thanks to that touchdown. 7-6 against the Eagles. What do you remember about that?
Three things. One, on the ride into Philly, our bus driver from the airport got lost getting to the hotel. That's one.
Wow.
And two, walking into the hotel, going down to my room, Otis Wilson is walking in front of me. And a door opens, and a head comes, pops out, and Otis goes in. I'm like, do I know her? It was the late Phyllis Hyman. And three, it was my, we won 7-6. I caught the touchdown pass, and that was my first game ball. And also, that was the game that I was returning punts on my rookie year, and Dicker took me out in the fourth quarter, and Jeff Fisher was my backup. And Jeff Fisher broke his leg in that game. He caught a punt, and I'm screaming for him to get down, and he doesn't. Guy hits him from the backside. He breaks his leg, goes on injured reserve. And later become, the head coach for the Tennessee Titans, and then subsequently St. Louis Rams. So Jeff Fisher's always been around. We'll always be connected. But that was my first game ball, 7-6 in Philadelphia. First pass was from Vince Evans, and people almost don't remember that.
And Dennis, you know, we've talked sort of all around it, but you remember that dominant 85 Bears team, but you're on offense and you had to go up against that defense every day in practice. What was it like trying to make a name for yourself and do all the, you know, become the great wide receiver that you did, doing it against that 85 Bears defense?
Well, I try to enlighten people all the time because 85, The 4-6 defense gets a lot of credit. When I try to remind people, says, and this is something that's in my book, if you look at the Bears in the 80s, how good were they really? You might, you know, the 4-6 defense got a lot of notoriety during the 85 season, especially 84, but before Richard Dent, Dave Duerson, and Wilbur Marshall get here, majority of that nucleus was already here. They weren't beating anybody. So I remind them that the 85 Bears offense led the league in rushing, led the league in time of possession, and second in scoring. So they really weren't on the field that much. And there were 6 ball games that year that if the offense does not score, we don't win. Specifically the great night, the Thursday night special, you know, in Minnesota, when a man comes off the bench. So I, after 30-plus years, I got really tired of the defense getting all the credit. Until we got an offense, we couldn't beat anybody. But when you're playing against the best every day in practice, who do you fear on Sunday? Nobody. And for being on that offense, we had to gain respect because they were getting all the accolades and our offense was not, and we had had enough of that. So they made us better for our practice against us every day, and we made them better because we didn't take any crap from anybody. And I know specifically I didn't. They might have tried to bully Willie, but that would not work on me.
Dennis, you mentioned a moment ago your book. You've got a book that's just being released, Silky D Bears All. Talk about what you've got in that book.
It talks about the evolution of the game over the last 30 years. There's some political stuff in there going back to the Colin Kaepernick situation. There's some issues in there about domestic abuse in the National Football League. You look at a Tyreek Hill now. You look at players who have been reinstated based on their abuse to women. I talk about that. I talk about my relationship with Peyton. I talk about my relationship with my mom. I talk about being a free agent and my journey being in a place where I was not supposed to be based on what so-called experts specified that I was not good enough to play. It talks about legacies. It talks about Wilbur Marshall being the first player to create free agency when he left Chicago to go to Washington. Talk about sweetness, and we're talking about bile duct cancer and the awareness that the National Football League has in the month of October for cancer. It talks about Dave Duerson and the reason why you see those blue tips on the sideline now, because of all the changes that were made for the NFL for safety, when they ignored it for decades. And a lot of that stems from the fact that Duerson committed suicide and they were able to do testing with a live brain. So there are a lot of things and a lot of players on my team who had tremendous impact on where the league is today. But it really is an embodiment of what's going on in the world. My journey and my life story, with a few things in there to clarify some errors based on myth about what happened with the 85 Bears, what happened that year, questions that really have never been asked or asked to the right people.
So that bears the question. What are the myths and I certainly don't want you to give away all the things that we need to go out and buy your book for, but maybe tease us just a little bit with maybe what one of those myths might be.
Well, one of the things that bothers me every day is when I say, well, we saw in the Super Bowl shuffle, no, all black people don't look alike. I'm not in it. And that's one. And Willie Gault was my roommate. So there's a reason why I was not in it. William Perry scoring the Super Bowl and not Peyton. There's an issue with that. The Kwame McDonald police brutality shooting in Chicago that got national attention. There's issues in there about that. The Colin Kaepernick situation about being blackballed. There's issues about that. It's the fact that the league has changed dramatically. It's safer, but it's also softer. And the rules that have been changed for today are all about stats and fantasy football. And when you talk about players who played in different eras before now, we don't like it. Because to me, you can almost put an asterisk on everything. I mean, it's the point right now, you can't touch receivers after 5 yards. You can't target receivers. You can't cut outside the tackle box or sacks are up. You know, kickoffs are almost non-existent. Guys can go from team to team right now without even honoring their contract. So the league has changed dramatically. And how much fun is it? Not as fun as it used to be. Training camps are almost non-existent, no more two-a-days. And And so the league now is full of divas. We never had these many divas in my era.
Well, Dennis, before we let you go, let our listeners know, how can they find your book and go out there and get their copy and learn more about some of the things you've sort of wet our whistle about?
Well, you can go to barelyactive.com. That's BarelyActive.com to get it on from my website. Otherwise, you can get it on Amazon. And I wanted to make sure it was on Amazon, so it doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can still get the book. And I'm still praying for a turnaround for my Bears, even though they've lost back-to-back games, that they can get things back on track. So I can cheer again, because it's been rather disappointing.
Well, Dennis, we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come back and be a part of the show. I promise not to wait 6.5 years before we get you back on next time. We certainly appreciate your time.
I've always got something to say, and the great thing about it, I will never sugarcoat it.
We can't ask for anything more than that. Dennis, you've been fantastic. We look forward to it. Hopefully you'll come back and join us a little bit later on in the season. Update us on how the book sales are going, and I know both Bob and I have a lot more questions we'd love to get your insights on.
Well, I'm always available, and I appreciate you guys having me on, and have a great evening, and God bless.
Thank you, Dennis.
Take care. All the best to you and your family.
Bye-bye.
That is former Bears wide receiver Dennis McKinnon. Bob, that's fantastic. A, you know, I'm looking forward to getting a copy of the book and reading through that. But B, when we have somebody on the show, you can't ask him anything more than, don't sugarcoat it. Give us, you know, the straight stuff, and that way everybody can sort of quell whatever they thought might be going on, or they don't have to make judgments for themselves, because we're hearing it straight from the guy's mouth, and he certainly does that. He's fantastic.
Yeah, we've heard from others, Chris, that one of the strengths of this show is the guests that are totally real, you know, and not sugarcoating anything, I mean, he's from our era too, Chris. So, I mean, we can compare the eras, and I think he's exactly right on most of the stuff he said. So, can't wait. We do have more questions, and we'll have him on soon.
Yes, we will. All right, we've got our next guest, Drew Bledsoe, hanging on the line. Going to get to Drew on the other side of this real quick station break.